building a new home or garage, or expanding your current living space, get your project off to the right start at Hammond Lumber Company. Hammond's Home Planning Center specialist will work with you to professionally plan your project and bring your ideas to life. Start with a sales representative at any of Hammond's 34 locations across Maine and New Hampshire, or schedule a time to bring in your plans, ideas, or rough sketches. You can also explore Hammond's extensive digital library of stock drawings for ideas and inspiration. Using advanced 3D modeling software, Hammond's drafting department will provide a customized floor plan. Once you approve the design, you'll receive detailed plans and a complete materials list. And when you buy all your materials from them, Hammond will refund all your design fees. To get started, bring your vision to Hammond Lumber Company, your building project partner.
Hi, this is Julie Sleeper, co-owner with Realty of Maine. With over 25 years of experience serving the communities of Maine, we're proud to be your local experts with deep roots right here at home. But we're more than that. We also have national and global reach. As part of leading real estate companies of the world, we connect with the top agents, buyers, and sellers in over 70 countries. Whether you're moving here to Maine, across the nation, or anywhere in the world, we can help make your move seamless. Local expertise, global connections. It's time to move with Realty of Maine.
VOM, the voice of Maine, is driven by Varney Auto Group. Reliability, integrity, and trust are Varney values and ones you'll find at Varney Auto Group. Online at varneyvalue.com.
You're going to love the local savings this week at your hometown proud Orno and Callis IGAs. Both with boneless beef shoulder roasts for $5.49 a pound. Fresh chicken leg quarters for 99 cents a pound. Bone-in assorted pork chops for $1.99 a pound, and 8-ounce Hatfield hand steaks, 2 for $5 this week at your hometown proud Callis and Orono IGAs. Produce aisle, 5 pounds of new crop white potatoes for $2.88, and fresh red, green, or black seedless grapes in living color, $1.88 a pound. Tony's frozen pizzas are $2.88 each. That's a wow. Birdseye frozen vegetables are 10 for $10. Pepsi Family 24 packs are just $10.88, and 6-pack Fiora paper towels or 12-pack bath tissue, produced in Baileyville, Maine, just $3.98 this week. You'll love the local savings this week at your hometown proud Orono and Callis IGAs.
VOM weather from the Hammond Lumber Company Weather Desk.
Tonight, passing clouds, cooling to the middle 40s. Tomorrow, sunshine and lower 70s. Tuesday, a mix of clouds and sun with a risk of an afternoon shower and middle 70s.
Maine, Maine, Maine Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing, hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your Outdoors Hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Catherine, do you see that moose over there?
I know. I was wondering what that was.
Is that a bull or a cow?
I don't know. Can we hear it? Oh, that sounds like a big, 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 big bull to me.
Okay. Speaking of bull, welcome to the Maine Outdoors, Maine's longest running outdoor talk radio program. We're so glad you could be aboard with us tonight. We have a good show lined up, and I'll introduce our guests in just a moment. First, the crew, the man behind the controls and the toggle switches who's there every week, week after week for the past 30 years. Well, not quite that long, but
no.
Half of that, maybe 15 years, right, Norm?
I don't have a clue.
You don't count the days.
I don't count.
That's good.
No, I don't. I'd have to ask Jim Layton.
Jim would know, yeah.
When he was sick.
We'll have to ask him. Yeah. Anyway, nice to have you here.
Well, thank you. I enjoy it.
And our co-host is a registered Maine guide. She's knows her way around a fly rod, and she's a avid bird hunter, and she's a member of the Fish and Wildlife Advisory Council, our co-host, Catherine Gordon.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Nice to have you here, my dear.
So my favorite time of year, Saturday, coming up. grouse season starts.
Grouse season starts.
I am very excited.
Yeah, good. Exciting. And the moose season opens this week.
Yes.
And for those of you who are hunting moose for the first week, we wish you the best of luck and hope you hunt safely. Our guest tonight, in this order, he is a member of the Arnold Expedition Historical Society, and he's also an author. We had him on, what, Norm, 6 months or a year ago?
Last November, I believe.
And a wonderful book you wrote. And his name is Norm Kalick. Welcome to our show, Norm.
Thank you.
And also with him, another member of the Arnold Expedition Historical Society, Ken Wind.
Thank you.
Did I say that right?
Wing.
Ken Wing. Yeah, W-I-N-G. Ken Wing. Nice to have you here, Ken.
Thank you.
And if you haven't guessed it already, the topic tonight is the famous Benedict Arnold March from Augusta all the way up to Quebec. And we'll be talking about that in a few minutes, and I think you'll find it educational, informative, and we'll have fun as well. We also have trivia question. We're going to give something away in just a minute. Right now, I want to remind you that this program is sponsored every week by the Northwood Sporting Journal, my favorite publication, and you're listening to us on the Voice of Maine News Talk Network. And if you'd like to call in on be on the program, what's the number, Kathy?
It is 1-800-966-1039.
And that is a toll-free statewide number. You can call us from anywhere in the continental United States at no charge. September issue of the Sporting Journal is available on the newsstands. You can tell it because there's a picture of a big bull moose on the cover.
I love that picture of that moose.
Look at that dewlap on that critter.
I know, it's beautiful.
That's a big bull. Nice rack, too, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So anyway, if you'd like to get a subscription, you do so by calling Alicia at the office at 732-4880, or you can check us out on the web. We have digital subscriptions available at lower price. You can find that at sportingjournal.com. And if you're interested in buying an advertisement in the Sporting Journal, we encourage you to do so. And you can call Tracy Grant at 399-9905. That's 399-9905. Outdoor Digest time right now. The hunter safety courses are in full swing. I think I had the list last week, and I thought I had it with me, but I don't. Anyway, check out your nearest rod and gun club. A lot of the rod and gun clubs sponsor these hunter safety courses. If you're new at hunting, you'll need to pass a course in order to get to buy a hunting license. Isn't that right, Catherine?
It is, and they do a lot of really good work. The gentleman that was on the show last week, and I got the biggest kick that he was teaching it, and his grandson was in the class. So I like to see the traditions being passed on.
Oh, that's
nice.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, that was Woody Higgins.
Yes. Yeah. Hi, Woody, if you're listening.
The Penobscot County Conservation Association is conducting hunter safety courses. The Rangeley Club up in Rangeley and many others. And if you live near a fishing game club, you can call and find out exactly when those courses are taking place. Moose season opens, I think I got this right. I checked the law book. It's the 23rd. And when is that? Is that Tuesday? It's this Tuesday, right? Yeah, today's the 20th. I'm kind of surprised that it opens on a Tuesday, but I checked the law book.
I was looking to see what the day was, because you said that, and I'm like, does it start on a Tuesday?
I checked the law book, and I was a little curious why it was on a Tuesday, but that's what it said. Anyway, it's in WMDs 1 through 6, as well as 10, 11, 18, 19, 22, and 28. And, of course, it's a staggered season. There will be other moose seasons into October. Yours truly will be hunting the last week in October.
I'm so excited for you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I am, too. I'm really pumped. Let's see. They still haven't caught the bucket stalkers of West Musquash Lake.
I'm starting to lose hope there.
We talk about that, and I'm probably tired of hearing us mention it, but it's a serious issue. And there's a $6,000 reward offered if you know who put the big largemouth bass in West Musquash Lake, which is
horrible.
A real tragedy.
Yeah.
If you know have any information, you can call 1-800-ALERT-US, and the Warden Service guarantees that you'll be anonymous. But if your tip leads to an arrest or a conviction, you get 6,000 $1 bills.
I think it's a little more than that now.
It is?
Yes. It was six, and then there was another organization that came forward with some more money, so I think it's even more than that
now. Is it really?
So,
wow. Yeah, that's a big purse.
Yep.
Okay, and finally, in the outdoor news, sad news that a New Jersey man died a couple of days ago while bear hunting up in,
I didn't
in Somerset
hear this story.
County. A 69-year-old man from Bridgeton, New Jersey, was hunting bear, apparently died from a heart attack.
Anyway,
the Carabasset Valley Fire Department rescued him, but I guess it was too late.
Also,
the good news is that the AMC, the Appalachian Mountain Club, just purchased, Catherine, a bunch of acreage over in the 100-mile wilderness, which will be protected Ooh. In perpetuity.
I keep saying I'm going to hike it. And once Norm told me that I didn't have to hike Katahdin, that I could hike to the base of Katahdin, I'm like, I might be able to do that.
Yeah.
I've hiked Katahdin before, but not after hiking 100 miles.
Yeah.
But to be official, I think you have to summit.
Yeah.
No, I thought we agreed that we didn't have to hit the summit.
Well, that might be between us, but it...
Oh, okay.
Well, you know, I hiked 10 miles of that 100-mile wilderness.
Oh, you did?
Just to find out what it was like. And my granddaughter and I hiked over in there and slept overnight, came back out. And it's rough terrain.
Yeah.
There's a lot of big rocks and big gnarly
up and down.
Roots everywhere.
So yeah. I love to hike, and I've done some of the 4,000s, especially around the Sugarloaf area and different things, but I don't know if I want to hike 100 miles and then climb a ton.
It takes a special kind of person to do that. Anyway, they bought a bunch of acreage there, 29,000 acres.
Nice.
They have bought.
And, very nice.
And the land will be protected, undeveloped, on the it's part of the main stem of the Pleasant River. So that's good news.
Absolutely.
And I think that wraps up Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal. Our guests again, if you joined us late, are Norm Kalick and Ken Wing, who are members of the Arnold Expedition Historical Society. And we're going to find out all about the famous historical march by Benedict Arnold in just a couple of minutes. Right now, though, we have a trivia question, which is good for a copy of my Maine Deer Hunter's Logbook. And Catherine has the question.
The question is hunting ever allowed in Baxter State Park? And explain your answer.
Okay, 1-800-966-1039. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back in Maine Outdoors, and Catherine is waiting for you to answer her question. The question is hunting ever allowed in Baxter State Park? And she wants you to...
explain that
she
answer.
She wants you to explain it, not just a yes or no answer,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Tell me. Tell
All right.
me why or
let's,
why not.
Let's take a call. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors. What's your first name and where are you calling from?
Hi, good evening. My name is Ben from Augusta, Maine.
Hi, Ben. What do you think the answer is?
I think that the only hunting that's allowed is actually on the northern end of the park.
Ooh.
I think it's by like the Katahdin Lake Parcel area or something like that. It's about 4,000 acres.
It is north.
North of what?
I didn't hear that part. It is on the north part of the park, but north of what?
I think it's called the Katahdin Lake Parcel. It's, I guess, north of, like, Russell Pond and South Branch or the northern lake areas there.
Yeah. You're closer.
Close enough, yeah.
Yeah. Catherine's feeling generous.
The Wadley Brook and Trout Brook, it's north of those areas. Yeah. But you knew north. That's pretty good.
Yeah, good work. Have you ever hunted that?
Sure. I have never hunted that. I've hunted outside the park near, like, Mattagammon Lake, that area.
Yeah.
Beautiful area.
Absolutely beautiful.
You know, I hunted that once with the commissioner of the Department of Fish and Wildlife back in the... had to be in the 90s, and we were in the woods probably 20 minutes, and I shot an 8-point buck.
Ooh.
And we took it downstream in a canoe and down to Trout Brook Farm, is it, I guess? And it was raining cats and dogs, and Bucky was the stern man, and we got lost on one of the arteries coming out and got in the dark. Long story, but we had a good time. It was a good hunt. But a lot of people don't realize that, right, Norm, that you can hunt in Baxter Park?
True.
Yeah.
I don't think it's well known.
Not well known. Anyway, congratulations to you, sir. And if you'll stay on the line, Norm's going to get your address, and I'll make sure that book is mailed to you this week.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, anything else on your mind tonight?
No, it's a great show. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for listening, and Norm will get your address, so stay with us, okay?
All right, thank you.
All right, and that is the correct answer. And when Norm gets through juggling all these things, he's going to hook us up with Jason Smith. Now, Jason was on our show, I don't know, a year ago maybe, right?
Yeah, sometime within this past year he was on. He's the gentleman that has the drone that goes underneath, and he found, what fish did he find that was so
he found a,
in Green
a,
Lake?
He found Atlantic salmon in Schoodick Lake.
Yes, it was something.
Fabulous photos he takes.
He takes the best drone photos.
Yeah.
But there was a plane during the seaplane fly-in in Greenville that crashed. The pilot's fine, but unfortunately the plane was 90 feet underwater, and I think he was one of the people that helped bring it up. His drone helped. I think he's going to explain
locate,
all that.
Probably locate it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. It's the neatest little rig.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I follow him on Facebook if anyone wants to follow him. He puts his videos on there, and the fish are just amazing. He went out to Pusha right here in the Bangor area.
Yeah,
got a pike on there.
Oh, did he really? Yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah,
cool video.
Yeah, he does some nice work. Anyway, we'll talk to him in just a few minutes. I guess Norm is taking an address right now. Let's start talking to our guest.
Yes.
And again, welcome to our show, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. Would you explain, Norm, the Arnold Expedition Historical Society? Tell us a little bit about it, when it was founded, and what its mission is, would you?
Sure. Well, basically, it was in the late 60s. There was a fellow named White Nichols. Was really the mover and shaker of the whole operation, get going. And they were kind of in the early days building up to the bicentennial, which was in 1975. So they did a lot of activities trying to promote the Arnold Expedition. And that's what we do today. We're trying to have educational programs. We give guided hikes. We have our own website, arnoldsmarch.org. But the idea is just to keep people aware of the history that there is in the state of Maine with that 200-mile trek through the state by 1,150 soldiers back in 1775.
Okay. And, we're going to take a quick break, sure. Okay, and take care of Jason. You there, Jason?
Yes, I am.
Nice to have you on board. Catherine explained to our listeners what you're all about, and we've had you on the program before, and it's always fascinating what you do. But Catherine mentioned that you'd actually been involved in helping them locate that seaplane that flipped over and got in the depths of Moosehead Lake. Tell us about that, would you?
Yeah, absolutely. I had been contacted over the course of the day once it happened at the seaplane flying there, and there was just a few messages I got from people, and eventually was contacted by the guys that were going to be coordinating the recovery. And we went out there Sunday, and they had the coordinates for where the plane was supposed to be in the lake. And so we went out, we were able to find it on the sonar on the boats, and then I sent the drone down. And we got a few minutes of video just of the plane and how it was sitting on the bottom, just, you know, how it looked.
And that must have been very important for them to know how it was sitting on the bottom, right, Jason?
Well, that was kind of the other part of that was with the diver, Greg Canders, they were bringing out to actually do the recovery on the plane and do the diving. It gave him an idea, you know, going in what it would look like, you know, what might have to be deal with, and just really any amount of time, you know, we could save that process and get the plane out quicker. Certainly is important.
So how do they raise that with inflated balloons or what?
Yeah, exactly. So once we did that, they were going to be bringing Greg out there and his crew to just like you said, they put inflatable bags that they just pump with an air compressor or some of their high pressure air tanks that they have out with them, and it uses lift to pull the plane up and off the bottom. So I was actually able to on the second day that they were working on it, they invited me back out. And was able to video Greg down 100 and something feet down on the bottom.
Wow!
Actually doing the whole process of putting the airbags on. And
is that the video that you posted? Is that the gentleman in the video underwater?
Yeah, that was
a little scary. Tell people how they can watch that video because I think it was fascinating.
Like it
was
How do they watch that?
So I have my YouTube channel, which is Maine Freshwater Exploration Going Deep, and there's a video on there called Moosehead Lake Plane Locating and Recovery Mission. And it shows pretty much everything right from, initially finding the plane to going back out and watching Greg put airbags on the plane and then inflating the bags. And I video it pretty much right from you know, to the point where the bags are inflating and you can see the plane starting to move and the silt's coming up off the bottom. So at that point, I had to pull my camera out of there because it's getting ready to come up.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And then it cuts to the scene where the plane comes shooting up to the top of the water, and you can see the airbags come bursting up and the top of the plane, break the surface of the water. And then some shots of us towing it back in with the boats. I'm super thankful that the pilot was okay. I mean, yeah. That was the most important thing.
You bet.
But it was certainly a really interesting project. One of the more interesting things I've been able to video.
Yeah.
You know, non-nature wise.
You bet. Well, anyway, we appreciate you sharing that with us. Would you do me one favor? If you would email me a photo of that plane on the bottom, I'd like to publish that in the Sporting Journal. I think people would be interested in seeing it.
Absolutely, yeah. I can certainly do that. Yeah. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Catherine.
Oh, you did okay. Great job, Jason. I love seeing your videos, all of them. It's really fascinating. Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jason. We appreciate it. All right.
Bye.
Have a good night.
You too. Take care. All right. Back to our guest tonight. Again, it's Norm Kalik and Ken Wing from the Arnold Expedition Historical Society. Now, let's go back. Let's go back to, what is it, 17 what?
75.
1775. It's the Revolutionary War.
Early part of it.
Okay, yeah. And why was Colonel Arnold assigned to march from Maine to Quebec? What was that about?
Do you want to take that?
Ken, go ahead.
Well, it was a two-pronged effort by George Washington to liberate Quebec from the British.
And why did he want to do that?
For two reasons. He was hoping maybe to, in fact, make a 14th colony and get some support, or to prove to France that we was worthy of their respect and support.
Don't mess with us, in other words.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, we needed France on our side,
yeah,
to help us war against England and okay. get our independence.
Okay.
So it was a good idea. And, you know, there were two armies. Arnold was one expedition to take Quebec, and there was another general, Schuyler, out of Albany, New York, that was going to take Montreal and then join up.
Was he successful in Montreal?
Yes.
He was.
He himself wasn't. He was sick, and General Montgomery took his place. But General Montgomery was the man that took Montreal.
He did take Montreal.
Yep.
Now, they set the scene a little bit. What was the time of year that he began, and where did he begin his march?
Well, it all started in Cambridge, but
Cambridge, Mass.
Yeah. But I think if you go back to June 14th, 1775, that's where it really begins. That's when the Continental Congress met in Philadelphia, the Second Continental Congress,
right.
And they established the Continental Army. And then 2 days later, John Adams nominated George Washington to be the commander-in-chief.
Right.
He was approved. Then he went to Cambridge short time after. And while he was there, as Kenny just described, Shula was going up through Lake Champlain, and then Washington had heard and kind of capitalized on the idea about sending an army up, a second prong, up through Maine. He'd heard about this Native American footpath that's been around for hundreds of years, used by the Native Americans, and then Jesuits used it to go between.
And what was that called, the footpath?
Well, it's the foot. I don't know if it really has.
Have a name?
Basically, it was a link between the Chaudière River and the Kennebec River.
Okay.
And it was really the only major footpath to let the tribes trade on the St. Lawrence to those with Maine.
Okay.
And then also actually been known about a long time. It actually shows on a 1645 French map way back then, though, as this trail existed. It was a crude map, but they knew it existed then. So he heard about it. And he checked it out. Yeah, he talked to people that lived in Maine, District of Maine.
Yeah.
And they verified it. Then Reuben Colburn, who lived, it's called Gardnerstown then, but it's Pittston now. He heard rumors that Washington was going to do this.
Yeah.
And he was looking for a boat contract.
Oh, yeah.
So he goes down and talks to Washington and explains.
So he was a boat builder?
He was. Yeah. He built the bateaus.
Oh, he did.
And once Washington decided, yes, it's a go, and he selected Arnold as the commander,
right?
Then they contacted Colburn, and roughly 3 weeks, he built 200 bateaux.
Did he really? What were they? What were these bateaus made from? What kind of wood?
Pine.
They're all pine?
Yeah. And one of the problems with in history, all the diaries kind of bear it out. It's such a rush job. He didn't have enough dry pine to make 200 bateaux.
Yeah.
So a lot of green wood.
Oh, so they shrunk.
They shrunk. And, you know, that caused wicked problems. In fact,
yeah,
part of the deal was that Colburn had to send he sent 20 carpenters with Arnold to keep these things repaired.
Oh, man.
20 carpenters. I didn't
yeah
know that.
And they were yeah quite busy.
Yeah, I bet they were. Yeah, yeah. How much did these each bateau weigh, do you know?
About 400 pounds.
400 pounds.
Yep.
Wow.
And not only that, so you got 200. Well, they're too small. Arnold never gave Washington, either one, Colburn, saying, we want X number of feet long, we want them so big. He never yeah said that. Just said, we want them big enough to hold 6-7 men
yeah
and roughly 100 pounds apiece.
Yeah.
And Colburn came up with this, but in Arnold's mind, they were going to be bigger. So he looks at them and says, we need more. So he built 20 more.
Yeah.
So they had 220 bateaux. Now, the interesting thing is, one of the interesting things, Colburn never got paid in full for building those bateaux.
Oh, is that right?
He got some, the story is anyway, maybe Kenny can elaborate on it.
So Washington kind of screwed him over, huh?
Well, Washington didn't, but Congress did.
The Congress did, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you can't trust those congressmen anymore.
Right, it was a bureaucracy way back then. But he supposedly sent the paperwork in, you know, to get paid yeah and lost the shuffle or whatever. And so Congress says, well, where's your paperwork? And he says, well, you got it. But they can't find it. So he got stiff
for
a lot of money.
You know, we got to take a short commercial break. You folks at home, we encourage you to ask questions of our guests. And what's the number, Catherine?
It is 1-800-966-1039.
And we're going to continue right after these messages. Yeah, before the break, Norm was talking about the bateaux. I was just kind of curious, is there a replica of any of these bateaux, where would you see one?
There's one on display at the Colburn House.
And where is that?
In Pittston.
In Pittston.
The Colburn House is the house where Reuben Colburn lived and had the boats built.
Okay.
It's owned by the state, but it's our mecca. It's where we go for meetings, and there's a boat museum there and everything mm-hmm else. And there's one on display there, and plus with the 250th anniversary, we have commissioned several boats, bateaux, to be built as replicas, and they're all in the water now.
Okay. And these paddled or poled?
Both.
Rowed
and poled.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And have you looked closely at the replicas?
Oh, yeah.
Are they pine?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is there anything protective on the keel, like steel of any kind? Or?
They're flat bottom with no keel.
Like a rowboat,
yeah,
really.
And they were designed to be abandoned. I mean, they were one purpose bateau. They were going to go as far as they could,
okay,
and they weren't coming back.
Yeah, they didn't.
So
yeah,
you didn't want to put too much money yeah in them.
They weren't going to resell them or anything.
No. No. Maybe kindling people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so in the total march was 175 miles, something like that?
More than that.
Was it more than that?
About 270.
270?
Ooh, wow.
Just ballpark it. Now, it wasn't all in the bateau. Part of it was walking and carrying. Do you know roughly what the ratio was? I mean, was it half the time walking, half the time poling? How did that work, you know?
Well, everybody couldn't be in the bateau, so there's always people walking.
Not when they got to the water.
Well, they would go around the shore. Generally.
Oh, okay.
But if they're going up the river, you had people, they would help them. A lot of times they went up to Kennebec, the water was shallow. And
yeah.
They had to get help with ropes or whatever, pull them through the shallows. So people would help out. But you had both, people in bateaux. Plus, when they had to portage them, everybody helped
them. Chipped in, yeah.
I'd like to mention one thing.
Sure.
One reason we're here tonight is it is the 250th anniversary, and coincidentally, or on purpose, tonight the expedition is underway. And if we go back to September 21st, 250 years ago, today, there would have been a fleet of ships, 11 ships, coming up the Kennebec River, heading to Pittston. And on the same day, Arnold was out front in his sailboat, in the schooner.
Yeah.
It was called Broad Bay, I think.
Yeah.
And he just got almost to Pittston, almost to the shipyard. And then the wind died. and got becalmed. But he was so anxious to see those bateaus, they launched a longboat, rowboat, and they rowed him there. And most of these boats were right along the shore, and that's when he looked at them and said, you know, they aren't what I want, I thought. And that's when he ordered more. But that all happened today, 250 years
ago. Wow. So when did they actually start the march? What was the rough date when they started the march?
Several things happened before the troops went out. They couldn't get the supplies in the sailboats to Augusta. The water was so low. So basically, they unloaded everything at Pittston, put it in the bateaux, and also, I assume, some on the land, too, to get to Fort Weston.
Mm-hmm.
Then, before the Army left, well, they divided it up. When they left Cambridge, there was two divisions, plus some three rifle companies. But when they got to Fort Weston, Arnold figured this out. We don't want such a big group. He turned it into four divisions and divided those same companies among four divisions. The idea being that if you come to a portage, everybody's not there at one time. They're mm-hmm. not competing for campsites.
Yep.
He spreads everything out.
Makes sense, yeah.
So then he sends before they all take off, he sends two lieutenants out, one Lieutenant Church and a Lieutenant Steele. Church, he wants to go up to Kennebec, roughly 90 miles, find the Great Carrying Place portage trail, locate it so the troops will know where to leave the river.
Yeah.
Go across, clear it enough so that mark it so they can find it. And then Steele went further. He was supposed to go up to Lac Megantic, which was called Chaudière Point at the time. And he was supposed to look for the Indians, the enemy, British,
yep.
assess the situation in the portages, and then come back and report to Arnold. So that was done. And then I'm not sure if it was the 24th, roughly the 24th, Daniel Morgan's riflemen, their company, they went first. The idea being they were the best of the soldiers. Most of the other people are sailors and farmers, not sailors as much as farmers, and just people with very little woods experience. So they sent Morgan out with the three rifle divisions. If there was enemy, he wants the best soldiers out front. But he was also charged with clearing the portage trail between the Kennebec River and the Dead River, roughly 13 miles. So he went first. And then the other divisions each day they followed. Then Arnold left. He was the last one to leave, and he's left in a birchbark canoe and had a couple of Indians as paddling for him. And then they had their problems, and it was leaking, and it was just wrong boat to have. So they switched to a dugout canoe. I think it was in Vassalboro, somewhere in there. And that's where he went up, in a dugout canoe.
Well, Norma was telling me that if he had been the colonel, he would have done it differently. He would have started like in the end of April, so they wouldn't get caught in the darn Maine winter. Why didn't they? Norm has a point. Why didn't
September?
They start earlier?
Yeah. Well,
why did they wait so late?
Remember, Washington did not get to Cambridge till July.
Yeah.
Roughly the 2nd of July. And then all this really worked fast coming
right
down.
They started planning in August.
They did.
Yep.
Yeah. But they must have been mindful of the fact that the Maine north winters are pretty darn rugged.
Well, part of the problem was that they figured the march was going to be 120 miles and take 20 days. When in fact it was 270 miles and took 45 days to reach the St. Lawrence.
It took them 45 days. Mm-hmm. They were there in the shank of the winter, right?
Yeah, November. November 6th is when they hit the St. Lawrence.
Well, they did get there by November.
Yeah.
But they encountered some pretty harsh weather, right?
Oh, all the diaries. If you read the diaries, they talk about, snowing. They talk about when they hit West Kerry Pond, which is called Third Kerry Pond. They could see big, low mountain snow on the mountain in October. Cold.
Hurricane.
They hit a hurricane?
Oh, man.
In October, there was 4 days of torrential rain,
yeah,
and it created the flood conditions on the rivers that they were on. They lost some equipment, bateaux, and everything else.
How many men did they lose before they got to Quebec?
30 to 40.
And was it hypothermia, starvation?
Well, all of the above.
All of the above?
Yeah. And when they get to the Chaudière River, Lac Megantic at the end, that's where
that's in Quebec.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The outlet of Lac Megantic is the Chaudière River. So they started down that, and lost all the bateaux, most of them there. But anyway, it was every man for himself. All order had broken down. So you get groups, two or three, singles, just kind of going along.
When did that happen? When they got to Quebec, the order broke down?
No, before they got there. Going down, they were starving at this point. After they crossed Lac Mécanic, started down the Chaudière River, they wanted to get this area or region called Sartigan. And that's the first village they would come to with any hope of finding food. And
so why didn't they, they didn't try to kill a moose along the way or something?
Well, they killed several moose.
They did.
But early on, because you get, as you know, you got 1,100 people walking through the woods. It doesn't take long for moose to go, maybe we ought to leave.
Yeah, early, they did.
They did, plus they had orders not to discharge the firearms.
They did?
Yes.
Oh, because for security?
Security. Yep. They didn't know, you know, there's journal accounts that they were worried about the savages attacking them.
If you're kidding.
Yeah. It didn't happen,
of
course.
If you're starving, I mean, shoot the gun, man, right? Yeah.
But there was no game to be had.
Yeah.
And there was just too many men making too much noise.
During this march, when things got really tough, were the desertions, were the trouble with discipline in the ranks, you know?
Other than Enos, who was the division, he chickened out, went back to Cambridge.
Enos, that was Colonel Enos, right?
Yeah. And he had took about 300 men with him.
Yeah.
Plus sick and wounded. But anyway, people really, really liked Arnold. I mean, you read the diaries, every one of them reflects the same thing. They respected him. He was known for being courageous, his leadership.
And he's got a terrible reputation in American literature.
Oh, he got a bum rap.
You think he got a bum rap? Did you admire Arnold?
Oh, if you read about him, you have to.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah.
I mean, what he did.
Well, let's get to the traitor part, like, you know, come on.
Well,
That's when we stopped liking him.
There we go.
Well, let me ask you this. You are students of Arnold, and I've read the books where he, you know, what caused him to be a traitor. And I kind of like the guy from my reading when I read about Washington. But why was he so respected? He kind of, his troops didn't accomplish their mission.
Well,
they went to Quebec and got beaten, right?
Yeah, but he was just an inspiring person. And he led from the front. I mean, he didn't, a lot of people led, you know, the general or whoever would be in the back telling the others what to do.
I mean, like Norm and I would do if we were on the show.
Yeah. But no, he was going back and forth. Come on, boys, we can do this. And they just respected him for that. And he was one of them.
Now,
on the other power scale, on the other side, people and his peers, other high-ranking officers, did not feel that way.
They didn't like him?
They
too ambitious?
They were jealous, very jealous.
They were jealous of
him. Yes, and he had a lot of support from Washington. He was Washington's right arm.
Yeah.
He did some amazing things without being told to do it.
Yeah.
He saved the Hudson River from being captured by the British. The British never took the Hudson except at New York, all because of Arnold.
So you both have high regard from him as a military man.
Absolutely.
Right? You do. That's interesting.
In his expedition, nobody else could have taken that expedition to what he did.
Has anybody written a book kind of lionizing him for his good qualities? Can you name a book?
Well, there's one called The Dark Eagle. It's all about Arnold, and it's one of the first times they tried to get away from this traitor thing. You reckon he was a traitor. You can't get around that.
Yeah.
But also, he was a great military strategist. Yeah.
But he messed the whole thing up.
When he became a traitor.
Yeah.
Well, he made two mistakes. If he had taken Quebec, which he didn't, and if he hadn't been a traitor, he would be up there with Washington.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. This is interesting. You folks at home, before we take a break, I want to remind you again, if you have a question for either of these gents, we encourage you to weigh in at 1-800-966-1039. And right now, Catherine has a very important message for you.
We do, from General Appliance Services. It is now owned and operated by Gary Coleman, who has been doing service work for General Appliance for 35 years. Nothing has changed. Rebuilt appliances available, parts and service for all makes and models, always reliable, giving you complete support support after the sale. You owe it to yourself to come see our gas appliances for your camp, gas refrigeration, gas lights, gas freezers, gas ranges, and Norm's personal favorite, the composting toilet.
You bet. Ride the wave.
Come visit us at our new location, two doors up, still here, serving first-class customer service at 103 Center Street, Brewer, Maine.
You folks at home can't see what's going on here, but I have a copy of a wonderful map that the Historical Society has issued, and it gives a complete detailed breakdown of the of Arnold's march to Quebec. And I see places up north where I have hunted as a younger man. Coben Gore area used to be great hunting when I was in college, and also so there's some good, I know by reputation, some really good trout ponds up in that neck of the woods. How come they didn't fish for trout if they were starving to death?
This might be a good time to talk about what they did find.
Yeah, what did they find?
Before the show, I mentioned that when Bob Mallett was on last year, we had a little bantering going back.
Oh, yeah, we had some good bantering.
got me thinking, you talk about native trout, wild trout, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So after the show, I went through some of the journals, diaries the men kept.
Yeah.
And I like to read a direct quote what Arnold wrote about the fish in the first Kerry Pond, which is East Kerry Pond.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Okay. This is, he wrote this on Wednesday, October 11th, 1775. Over the first pond, a half mile, in other words, a half mile they had to go across from east to west, and it says, which pond is a 1¼ mile long, we're talking about East Kerry Pond, our people caught a prodigious number of, he calls them fine salmon trout, nothing being more common than a man taking, 8 to 10 dozen in 1 hour's time, which generally weigh a half pound apiece. That's what Arnold wrote in his journal.
And what pond was that again?
That's East. Well, I mean, it's not that today, but
what?
I mean, it's now. It's just completely different. But that's it would be East Kerry Pond.
Today it would be East Kerry Pond,
And it'd be the first pond they hit coming from the Kennebec River.
Wow.
And then if you read, that's the biggest quote. But the others, Major Meigs, anyway, he said, in these ponds we find many, many plenty trout. Another quote, these abound with excellent large trout in great plenty, in which we caught several, which was no small help to us. That's Dr. Center. Another one says, the pond, and that was referring to West Kerry. This pond is full of trout, which we caught plenty in another journal, the East Kerry. So, in my mind, probably those people were the first white people to catch fish out of those ponds.
I bet, for sure. Yeah.
And they had plenty of pork with them, so that's part of the bait they used.
They fried them in salt pork, probably,
Can you imagine eating pork? Well, it's been 97 miles. They've come up the river. A lot of the supplies just got wet and have problems with that. But here's the opportunity to have a trout feed. So it must have been a dandy old time to gorge on trout.
Yeah, those are the days, right, Norm?
And I just got one more.
Okay.
This is from a book, Justin Smith. He was one of the early authors on the Arnold expedition.
Yep.
Another fellow before him named Codman. But what Justin Smith did, he published the book Arnold's March from Cambridge to Quebec, 1903. And in writing the book, he actually covered a lot of the route, at least what's in Maine. And he talked to people. And in this example here, he went up the Kennebec River, came to the entrance of the portage where Arnold and 1,100 people left. At this time, 1903, there were two farms right there. So he talks to these guys, Ames brothers they were. And so what they tell him is their father used to fish at East Kerry following the old Arnold Trail. It was still visible, because vegetation changed once you cut it. And he says, the Adams boys made a business of fishing and claimed they caught 1,100 pounds of brook trout from East Kerry Pond in a single season. Now, you can take it for what it's worth.
It's a lot of trout. Hey, we've got a caller standing by, Norm. Let's take it. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors. Your first name and where are you calling from?
My name is Ruth, and I'm calling from Orono.
Hi, Ruth.
Thank you. Hi. First of all, I just love your show, and this one is really true to my heart. There is
a wonderful book that my dad introduced me to when I was about 11 years old, and it's called Arundel by Kenneth Roberts. And it's about, it's a historical fiction novel.
Yeah, that's about the march.
Kind of, exactly, yeah. And it really lionizes Arnold. And I can remember reading that as like an 11 or 12-year-old with a map of Maine in front of me. I didn't live in Maine at the time. But with the map of Maine, trying to figure out his route.
I love that. Yeah, that's awesome.
Oh, it's just a wonderful book. There's a little bit of romance in it, which, of course, would appeal to a 12-year-old girl.
So what, Kenneth Frowney, you don't like romance?
I love it. But, you know, some of the boys, I can remember my husband reading it to our son and my son saying, "This is a girl book, Mom."
Oh, yeah, it was a good book.
but he still did love it. And
Be a great book for anybody. Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing that. That I think those kind of stories are super special. And these gentlemen have a group. And you want to tell us actually what the group is and how often you meet, in case Ruth might want to join you guys sometime.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Yes, it's the Animal Expeditions Historical Society, and we. Okay. One of our things we do is we maintain the trail. A lot of it, particularly Great Caring Place Portage, we know exactly where Alan went. Some other places, not so much, but we get a good idea. Yeah. So every year we have trail clearing, make sure people can hike. We got it marked. If you want to do a section, we can do all the Great Caring Place Portage Trail. And
you do guided hikes sometimes, too, correct?
Yeah, actually that's right. And I was going to mention that at some point, that we've got two coming up, because it is the 250th, and we are going to do a portion of the Portage Trail from the Kennebec River to the Middle Kerry Pond, which was the second pond back in Arnold's day. So it's going to be a guided tour. Kenny's going to speak at the cabin. We own a cabin on Middle Kerry called the Nichols Cabin, and so we'll go down by the Kennebec River. We're going to discuss what it looked like before Wyman Lake was there, how this whole thing shook out, and then we're going to walk roughly 4 miles to Middle Kerry Pond and then have lunch. Then Kenny is going to give a talk on what happened after that.
And when does this take place?
This is going to take this Friday.
This Friday?
Saturday.
Saturday. Something else. I'm trying.
Saturday?
The 27th.
That's right. So that hike is full. There's 20 people. We don't want any more than 20 because it's hard to communicate.
Yeah.
However, we have another one in October, and the one in October was full, but now 3 people dropped out. So if anybody's interested in doing 4 miles, 4.5 miles of the Portage Trail, I'll give you my email, and you can contact me, then I'll put you in contact with the person scheduling.
Okay. Are you still there, Ruth?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
We didn't forget about you, Ruth. And I love that you shared that story in the book with us. Did you have another question for these gentlemen? Or
no, I didn't. But this is just lovely to hear. And nice. You know, as someone who loves history and who is fascinated by the story, and it's just great to hear. And I think more people don't understand how wonderful the history of Maine really is. They think, oh, Maine, there nothing happened here, but it really did.
Yeah, you bet.
And I think that's a great gift that you're giving to future generations for them to understand the importance of the state of Maine in the development of this incredible nation.
All part of our legacy.
We are so lucky to live in.
Yeah, you are. We all are. Okay, thank you, Ruth. Yeah. We appreciate
your
call.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate the call. Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good evening.
Okay.
How far is the hike in October? How many miles?
We're doing the same hike.
Oh.
We've already done one, but twice more next week and in 18th of October.
Okay. We have another caller. Oh. Well, let's take it. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Norm Kalick and Ken Wing. We're talking about the Arnold March. Go ahead.
Well, I appreciate your time and efforts in the show. It never goes unnoticed for the avid outdoorsman. You guys do great. Quick question. It's not related to the show. I got my first moose permit this year, but I've come down with Lyme disease in the worst way, and I've turn my paperwork into the state to try to apply for a permit for next year, and I haven't heard anything. And when I call, they direct me through more than the right person, and I'm just kind of nervous because it has to be turned in a week before the hunt, which is coming right up.
If you have a note from a doctor, that would clinch it for you.
I turned that paperwork in. I just didn't know if there was any, you know, branch or if you guys have had anyone in the past.
I've heard of a number of cases of people who have come down with an illness or something, and they were able to move it back another year. Good luck to you. I hope it works. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys for the show. How close
do you live to Augusta?
Not very far. I actually delivered the paperwork myself to the
I was going to say that might be the option, is to go right there and ask them, who do I talk to and who can help me with this? If you live close enough, I would go right there and ask.
Yeah, I would do that. Thank you, caller.
All right.
All right, good luck to
you. Thank you.
All right, appreciate it.
Yes.
Good luck.
We have another caller standing by. Let's all of a sudden a caller. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with Norm Kalick and Ken Wing. Go ahead.
I'm calling from Skowhegan. My name is Avery Wing.
Okay, go ahead.
You've got 1 minute.
I'm a member.
We've only got a minute. Make it fast.
Okay. How did you become a member of the History Society?
Okay, good question.
That is a good question.
Great question.
Yeah, what I would suggest, we'll send you the form. Maybe you can give Norm your email address, and he can give it to me.
There you go. And
I'll make sure you get it. You can also visit our website, arnoldsmarch.org, and that gives you a lot of background information.
All right.
I'll gladly send it to her.
Okay.
That'd be great.
Okay, that's it, I think.
It was Arnold March. So don't
hang up. Just stay on the phone.
Yeah, stay on the line, and Norm will get your email address.
Yeah, because I'm going to be busy next 20
Okay, all right.
Thank you.
We're almost out of time. We want to thank both you gents for being here and
wish you
the very best of luck with your affair coming up. And a lot of good information. I'm a historian of sorts, and I've learned a lot tonight. I hope the folks at home have as well.
We got 30 seconds?
Yes, go 30
seconds.
It.
Okay, make it quick.
Actually, 3 seconds.
3 seconds.
Talk over the music.
We're out of time. Okay. Sorry.
Oh.
All right.
Okay.
Come on.
Next week, our guest is going to be turkey hunter and writer Stu Bristol. Will tell us all about the turkey season. We'll see you all next week right here on
The Maine Outdoors.